It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here, and we're going to talk about, of course, all the rumors swirling around about the new iPhone, new MacBooks, and maybe even a new Apple Watch. We're less than a month away from the announcement. Let's see what people think is going to happen next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 519, recorded Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. Locked in the bathroom. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero, Eero.com, and at checkout, select overnight shipping and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. And in this, the vacuum preceding the Apple news, the Apple rumor. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times, looking sharp. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Leo.
Good to see you.
So this is the last time we could make like comments regarding like the Brick House set studio.
This is it. I'll explain in a moment. Renee Ritchie also here from iMore.com, host of the brand new Apple Talk podcast, which is Marvy.
Oh, thank you so much.
Marvy.
My childhood dream, Leo. I've caught almost every Spider-Man villain.
Wow, look at that. You've got a 2000... Pokemon?
Oh, see, the Pokemon are okay, but I managed to name them all after Spider-Man villains, and that makes me incredibly happy.
you're just a sad person.
I know. There's a few things in life to love, Leo.
It's one thing when you wish to do something that makes you like a nerdy social outcast, but when you realize that, wait a minute, there are 50 or 60 nerdy social outcasts here in this park, I need to make myself a nerdy outcast of the nerdy outcast.
The nerdiest of the nerds.
At least I'm not him. Jeez.
Right and nerdy. Actually, we were in San Diego on Thursday and Friday, and Pokemon fever has hit what do you call San Diego? The city of the...
The city that never changes weather.
The city of the never changes weather. The city of Diego. We were in Coronado, and there's a kind of like a median strip with grass. And I thought, I couldn't... we drove by, and I thought, what's going on? And I realized, they're all going like this. And then that night, we came back, because there's three Pokestops, or four, no, there's four Pokestops with lures and a gym in a very small area.
The Golden Square.
Yeah. And then we came back after, we went to see a play, and after the play, about 10:30, we're coming back, and it's like Woodstock. You can't even drive. They're spilling into the street. They're shoulder to shoulder. It was incredible.
I was at a park, and this very nice old man came up, and he goes, if you want to get better at that, just go to iMore. There's this woman, Serenity Caldwell.
No.
She knows every trick. Yes, absolutely. And
oh my God.
I thanked him very much for the advice. It was the nicest thing I'd heard in a long time.
Oh, my God. You didn't say, I'm her boss?
No. I mean, it was just a great moment.
Awesome. Isn't that a wonderful moment?
Oh, I'm your friend, so I should say this. You didn't realize it was me. I came up just jokingly. And then without looking up, you said, yeah, she's great. She's wonderful. Get out of my way. And I'm like, oh,
there's a Pikachu around the corner.
Hey, I got my mind's on Magneto.
No, he was out catching with his daughter. They were doing some family time.
So we are now in that state, that sad and lonely state. Mm. Two of them, actually. One, this is probably the last time you will see us in this studio looking this purple. The purple lights are going. If you're watching video, this is relatively intact, although the rest of the studio is slowly disappearing in front of my eyes. But what's behind me is relatively intact, but only really for a few days more. We are building a new studio, as you know. In fact, Carson, do you have the picture of them? I like to check in to make sure they're not playing Pokemon Go. They are putting glue on the floor for the carpet tiles. That it looks small. It is not that small. You can see the lighting rig over there. It's actually the same size as our existing studio.
Can I say, wouldn't you love to have a job like that where your work is in itself your own progress bar?
Yeah. Only 48% more. Exactly. That's great. That's awesome. So there it is. And we will be moving there. And, there'll be this interregnum between today and sometime in the year 2018 where it will be look a little unfinished here and there. Like this gear behind me is this. What did you call that, Andy?
The cog.
The cog will be removed, I believe, from the wall sometime between now and the next Mac Break Weekly. We'll do one more Mac Break Weekly here, and then we will be moving to their studio. And there, you'll see the operation in the reverse. It will start looking pretty ratty, and then I hope one hopes get better and better bit by bit. However, that is not the vacuum I was referring to. I'm referring to the calm before the storm. Here we are, August 9th. Pretty certain there will be an Apple event sometime in the next 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty certain there will be a new iPhone or two announced. And the rumor mill is going hot and heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing more people who purportedly have actual hardware. And more people who are willing to actually share photos of what they purport to be actual hardware. And yes, 30 days before what we expect to be an event is the time where we start to take that stuff a little bit more seriously, because this is the time where they've got things ramped up, and they've got so many people briefed in that there is no godly way that you can keep a lid on what's going on.
So we can kind of
millions of them.
We can kind of trust, or relatively. I mean, even with the Samsung Note 7, when they announced it last week, there were at least two items where the rumor mill got it completely wrong. So it is still possible.
Yeah.
One or two
the rumor mill can tell you what is going into various stages of the product, can tell you exactly which feature might be in which model. But the most importantly, it can't tell you the story. So Apple has never really been about the chipsets. It's about the feature sets. And so it's got these two lenses. And it sounds like one of those lenses is a black and white one to increase low sensitivity. But what is that really going to deliver with the camera? And how are they going to tell us about it? What are the results? How is the chip, the processor? We know they're making an Apple A10, but what's in the guts of that chip, and how is that going to process and work with those lenses? And that's what Phil Schiller is going to tell us on the stage. So if we know the bits, like the rumor today was that it was going to have a 1080p screen on the iPhone 7 and a 2K screen on the iPhone 7 Plus, which is a big bump in resolution for both devices, and an actual standard, not a weird Apple 3X size or something. Mm-hmm. But what is that? What are they going to come out to say? Sharpest display ever? Are they going to say, well, it works with Google Cardboard now?
Now, probably finally, as good as the Galaxy S7, things like that. Yeah.
It's a case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Renee's exactly right. I mean, particularly when you consider that the CPU on an iPhone is part of pretty much every feature on that phone. So you can't really talk about the camera unless you talk about the CPU. You can't really talk about the display unless you talk about the CPU. Networking, everything feeds into the CPU. It's always interesting when you think about what sensor is going to be going behind the new camera, or what the megapixel count is going to be, who's going to be supplying it. But it really comes down to the secret sauce that Apple can create. But they can do things with a two-camera setup that probably no other device manufacturer can do, just because they've always developed this iPhone camera with the idea that we have a piece of silicon that does nothing but collect data that we can then transform into a picture that is much better than that sensor is supposed to be able to create.
There on the right is the purported case. Yeah.
And they've got an HDR pipeline, Ellie, all this from software through, and they've got DCIP3 displays in several other devices. So an iPhone that could not only shoot in RAW, but shoot in HDR RAW, but also display DCIP3. And I believe they're actually compatible with 2020, though almost no one has rolled that out yet. It starts to get really interesting. So like on the surface, yeah, it's a rounded rectangle, but a lot of the story is going to be about what they tell on that stage.
Yeah. If you look at Apple's typical release cycle, going back at least to the iPhone 4, every other year was a pretty radically new design. This is not going to be the talk that you would expect, right?
So it's hard. It gets really hard as you go forward. We saw that with Intel too. Intel was on TikTok, but going to 14 nanometer and then going to 10 nanometer, super hard. So they're doing TikTok talk, talk. And Apple, too, it's not that they... It's not that they're withholding it. It's that I wrote this in an article on this week. It's really effing hard to do the next design that they want, and it's just not ready yet. But there's a lot of stuff that is ready, and you can sort of put that into this. And and when Apple does do new designs, we still call them boring. I mean, the iPhone 5 was called boring.
It's pretty hard. I mean, we've kind of reached, I think, the perfect consensus on what form factor it should be. It should be somewhere between 5 and 6 inches, you know, probably right in the middle there. It should have a certain resolution. It's going to have mostly glass. Apple, one big change, which I kind of welcome, is even though they're going to stick with the home button, it's not going to be a moving, we hear.
Force press, yeah, force touch.
It'll have a little haptic in there.
Haptic, yeah.
I like that. They did the same thing with the iPod, remember? The click wheel moved for a while. But you want to, if you're going to have a sealed phone, you don't want to have little crevices in there.
And also there's mechanical failure. But I mean, the big thing is that like round wreck, boring, but then BlackBerry announces a Pop-Tart shaped phone and everyone goes, oh, look how innovative and
doesn't
design
buy
is. And then nobody buys
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the password.
And the people who called it innovative don't give the money back to BlackBerry for making it. They lost on
people,
it.
I think the consensus was, oh, how sad. You gave me a Pop-Tart. You gave me a Pop-Tart shaped phone. We wanted a phone that we could actually use. That was relevant for 2016 instead of 2008.
Here's a triangle. It's innovative. This is so
there
hard
are
to
just because of the that's because a, of the a, form a, factor, because of what you're doing with the phone. There are form follows function eventually, and maybe we've just reached
spreadsheets. Remember that lawsuit? It's like that this is the way you make a spreadsheet. I'm sorry, but that's the ideal way of doing it.
I think that most people who want style, they're just going to put it into a case anyway. I think there is a real desire not just to protect your phone, but also to make it identifiably yours.
That's a good point.
And we're not talking about to make sure you don't pick up the wrong one after dinner. I'm talking about you want something that really says this is not one of the 14 million phones that was made yesterday. This is Andy Anatko's phone. This is the one that has my sweat stains on it and stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There is some innovation the headphone jack, I'm sure Apple is going to spin as innovation. I have to give credit to Steve Gibson. Last week, right after the show, he said, you know, there may be one thing they could do with this getting rid of the headphone jack that would make it worthwhile. He had come up with this thought. What if they used the fact that the iPhone now has a big battery so it could power these headphones a little bit better? It has significant computational capabilities, so that could be used. What if these were noise-canceling headphones? People pay a premium for good noise-canceling headphones because they have to have a microphone, they have to have power, they have to have some computational capabilities. You could do all that with an iPhone with simple earbuds.
And they've been running out, right? That was the latest story where some of the noise-canceling headphones were failing. The battery was starting to fail after 18 months.
Right. I thought that was quite interesting. He also posited that maybe because these are wearables, you know, the thing in your ear really has access to not just, you know, motion like a pedometer, but also heart rate, better probably than something on your wrist. Also things, more obscure things like blood oxygen and perhaps even blood pressure. And you're now connecting not via an analog audio port, but by a data port. So this could be sent. The earpieces could be sending data back to the phone in some interesting ways.
Yeah.
So that is if Apple, to me, they have to say something like that. They have to give me some value for eliminating something that is, frankly, works and is useful.
Yeah, but that's all true. And also, after the show, someone on Twitter pointed out something I hadn't really considered. Talking about how much time I spend trying to see how many people in the world are wearing wired headphones versus Bluetooth and saying that I just don't see masses of people wearing Bluetooth headphones out in the wild. They say, well, how many people of the wired headphones you saw are wearing the headphones that came with the phone? So if Apple were to delete the headphone jack but include wired headphones with them, that would work with whatever port they're going to be plugged into. That might not be a very big deal for a lot of people, if it is true that they use whatever came in the box and they don't tend to lose them or wash them. But my main beef about it has always been, you can make there are 100 really good ways to explain why having digital headphones that plug into the Lightning port are a good idea. I still haven't heard a single good consumer positive idea that explains why you cannot also have a headphone jack, an analog headphone jack next to it.
Well,
medicine, all the things.
This is going to be, I mean, I think we now are close enough, and I said this last week too, that this probably is going to be what they do. And I'm just curious at this point how they justify it.
Metallic blue. Yeah, we established a long time ago that they can do it. Like, there was the iPhone 5S was a magnificent phone, and all the people we talked to said, oh, it's gold. I'm getting gold. And then 6S was a great iPhone. It's metallic pink. It's a metallic pink.
I want gold.
Just that superficial.
Yeah, I want pink.
New color.
You will get improved water resistance. You'll get a little bit more room for a battery. You'll get, I mean, there are some.
Again,
Samsung's doing it without that. I understand what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
In fact, Samsung took a shot at Apple last week on their event saying, and we come with a headphone jack. I cannot wait. I think this is going to be a very interesting conversation after the event. By the way, Renee, your best guess at the date of the event?
Whatever the first Wednesday in September is, that the 6th or the 7th or something?
Okay. First Wednesday in September.
I'm badly calendared.
And then 10 days later, which would be the 16th.
Mostly. Last year, they had to go an extra week, so it's 10 days or 17 days.
Depending on availability.
Last year was an anomaly or not.
Yeah.
It just depends on the supply chain.
Yeah. Anything else? Redesigned antenna bands, processors faster, it always is. I love it. I hope they do a higher res phone. I think that's one thing they've suffered. Although it's given them great battery life, right? The 6S Plus is only 1080p, but it goes all day.
And it was the technology they wanted because it's dual domain pixels and an IPS display, and it the LED is used for 3D touch. So you always try to make the best compromise you can with the constraints you have. If you go to OLED, they couldn't have done the 3D touch the way it was implemented. And if you go to too high a screen, sometimes you have to start messing with how the subpixels work. So they got the display technology they want, and it was sharp enough for what they wanted. But if they start wanting more, then they're going to have to, the technology matures and they can do more things at a better scale.
The rumors they're going OLED next year. You don't.
Could be. They just have to re-engineer 3D Touch.
Oh, okay. Tell me how 3D Touch is better than just long press.
My quick one is that it really allows you to put a lot more function without having to put a lot more clutter on the screen. And that not only adds to simplicity, but it also lets you redefine common parts of the user interface, like just the lock screen. The lock screen can really be that thing that you never have to drill down.
Because you have the pop-up menus.
Exactly. And also it's one of those perfect little interface enhancements where if you know it's there, it can make things so much faster once you learn how to use it. If you don't know it's there, it will never confuse you. It will never distract you. You can still tap to launch whatever you want and then, double tap or long press to do whatever you want. Doesn't interfere with anything else. So it really is the sort of thing where if you teach people how to use it on the lock screen of the iPhone, then that becomes part of their vocabulary. And then you could do things like, well, guess what? Now we do have this little phone screen.
You could do that with long press too, right?
Well, but you need to expand the vocabulary a little bit.
The haptics is nice, I guess, but really, long press could pop up a context menu.
Yeah,
it's right click.
A deep press is immediate. A long press is there's a pause, and you don't know how long you've held.
I'll tell you why I say that. A, because you want OLED, so maybe it would be you could go back to a long press. But B, because I have a lot of trouble. You know, when I get conflicted is when I want to do the jiggle, jiggle, jiggle to delete an app.
You got to go back to long press.
It's hard, to know. Well, how? I often 3D touch it instead. It's like,
So the advantage of 3D touch is if you expand. Like, remember that old thing when they designed the Mac, and the principle was that if you throw into the corner, that's the easiest motion. That's the end of that range. With 3D touch, with a multi-touch display, pressing harder is just the natural extension of that range.
Yeah.
So long press, you've got to time it. Like you said, you've got to hold it, but not too long.
Think about
with 3D
it.
Touch, it's the same sort of thing, but you're using force instead of time as a regulator for the controls. So it lets you exactly what Andy said: stack interface elements that are less used, but you don't want buried. I guess they are literally buried.
Right.
But you don't want to make them part like submenu B, part 9, 8 screens down. You want them to be accessible, just not in your face. And then, for example, clear all notifications. We've been asking for that forever. And now, just like on the Apple Watch, you 3D touch instead of regular touch on the delete button. It says, do you want to clear all notifications? Well, yes, I do. And it becomes discoverable because once in a while you're excited and you'll press harder and something will pop up and you'll discover it. And then you'll try pressing something hard again. It'll pop up again. And it gives you a chance to discover all this stuff without them having to have like a Legend of Zelda sort of explainer for every step of the way on the interface.
Yeah. All right. You've convinced me. And by the way, when I do long touch, I often press hard. That's why I'm confused, right? Don't you feel like if you press the elevator button to a little harder or you tap it more times, it'll work better? We know it's not true, but we still press.
We know it's disconnected. We know the letter's completely disconnected.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with anything. The elevator will get here when it does. Any other, I guess one thing, there was a rumor for a while that it might be a kind of an iPhone Pro, that it would be all glass. That now we think is not the case, right?
Next year.
There's a lot, actually, a lot of what we're thinking, what we're kind of extrapolating about is just the idea that there's a nice round number for an anniversary coming out next year. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. And for some human weakness analog brain reason, we tend to think that this is the one that's going to be, it's going to be fused light. It's going to be a quantum packet of light. There's going to be no tangibility to it whatsoever. They're going to do something way better than just there's going to be a new case color involved with it. So anytime that it seems like it's justification for people like us that we're thinking, I don't think that they're going to have that sort of 3D camera. I think they're saving that for next year, the big 10th anniversary model, when for all we know, Apple's like, well, yeah, I guess we'll do a poster or something. But no, we're just going to do whatever phone we
have. The iPhone, 10th anniversary, the iPhone 7S or 10th anniversary iPhone X. I mean, like, there's certain things that sound impressive.
It's a mixed anniversary, I have to point out, because they announced the iPhone in January of 2007.
Yeah.
So January of 2017 is really the 10th anniversary, not September. It came out in June, not September. So I think you could just as reasonably argue that this phone is going to be the 10th anniversary iPhone. It's the one we'll be using in January 2007.
Well, also the 10th model. Like, they've done, this will be, I think,
all right, 10th model. Okay, you're right. That's a good point.
How about we just make it the 10th anniversary of the phone that we thought that Apple's going to be making back in August of 2016? One that has the keypad and the one that will have the pull-out antenna and the stylus.
It's hard to remember what it was like before it came out. I mean, we were doing this show. I remember Scott Bourne was so excited about the iPhone. We even debated whether there was going to be an iPhone. Apple was that good at secrecy in those days. And whether it would be named the iPhone. Scott was sure that it would be named the iPhone. Remember those days, Andy? You were with us then. It's funny that we don't live in that was we were living in a different time.
Well, again, it was still a Steve Jobs era.
Yeah.
And I still remember that. Gosh, I will. One of those memories that I just immediately broke the plastic tab off the corner of it.
Yeah.
Inside joke for people who are above the age of 32 was just being there at the Steve Jobs presentation of the iPhone. Because
Andy, what's a cassette?
Shut up. It's the things you're not allowed to touch.
Yeah.
They're only daddies. My daddy knows how to work.
Oh, that's Tony Fadell's iPhone. Too soon.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, that's just the in every Apple event, there's a certain amount of excitement that is not fake, but it's probably contributed to by the presence of Apple people who are there. This is the first one where unequivocally it's like everybody who is trying to be jaded, even the people that I saw who are consistently and kind of reliably anti-Apple, were like, yes, it's a phone and it's an internet device.
And it was weird too, though, because it used to be Macworld and CES were back to back, and you had people trying to fly in between both, and you never knew which was going to have the bigger announcements. And then I think right away, just CES was absolutely eclipsed. There's just nothing else announced that year mattered.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, that's all we could talk about. We get to Vegas, and all you could talk about is Apple. Those were the days.
Wasn't even there.
For 3 months, I didn't have to pay for a single drink or a single dinner because I was like that elder at the village.
Said, tell us, Andy. Tell us.
They tell me that you are the one who held a working iPhone.
You touched it.
Well, yes, it was an overcast day. I was tired. And
here's a rumor that I found fascinating, and it really came out of left field: a new Apple Watch this year. Possible.
KGI Ming-Chi Kuo.
Yeah, Ming-Chi Kuo. Now, Ming-Chi Kuo has a checkered history. He's an analyst.
He's better than most other financial analysts.
He talks a lot about Apple, and he talks from the supply chain side, mm-hmm. which means he usually has some kind of deeper knowledge. According to Ming-Chi Kuo, there will be a Apple Watch 2 later this year, or at least announced later this year, with GPS barometer, larger battery, but same thickness, which is an amazing physics.
Higher capacity, I think, not maybe denser, not larger.
Yeah, or maybe the electronics take up less room.
And if it has GPS, would have to have a larger capacity battery miraculously change.
Same battery life, larger capacity.
They do make watches with GPS that are big-ish, but not massive.
The Garmin. It's like Captain America's shield on your wrist. Yeah,
okay, that's pretty big. there's one Samsung watch that's not much bigger than an iPhone that has GPS built into it.
Yeah. I see. It's always an interesting discussion because if you're going to have GPS, I think that either that means that you're going to be producing a really fitness-focused device for people who they are going to want to leave their phones behind.
Yeah.
And that means that, of course, they're going to be out exercising. Or it means that the other reason for leaving your phone behind is that a lot of the reasons why you feel like you need to have your phone in your pocket, that capability is on the watch. And for that, for me, that means having some sort of an internet radio on it. I don't think that it would be a GSM, but imagine if you just had something that could do at least Edge. So just little bursts of text. You're not streaming music. You're not streaming video. You're just allowing an app or a server someplace to follow through a message or even just send a basic SMS text message. So it's interesting to figure out what kind of device would you build if you decided you had to have GPS on it? And like I said, there's a really good case for a fitness watch. There's not a great case for a regular watch that has GPS, but it can't do anything to communicate with the outside world unless it's connected to a phone still.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that that fitness is such a huge market for them. And right now, a lot of their information says that people are going so far as to jog with an Apple Watch and a Garmin, for example, because all they want is that GPS. They just need that accuracy. And if they can serve that market, Edge is a really good idea, but I think they'd have to go back and actually build their own chipsets by now to do it. Yeah. And Apple is working on motors for a long time, but LTE, I think, is still too hot and too much of a drain. That's maybe a next year. A next year thing. So for now, it's sort of just let's make the joggers really, really happy, and then we'll go incrementally from there.
Also, to be fair, we're still talking about watches that cost about $100 to $500 to $600 more than the other popular competitors.
Right.
So it's probably a good thing for them to add more palpable value than simply, oh, look at the styling and look at how nicely the watch bands switch in and out.
And it's race to sleep. So with the GPS, it's not like you're playing Pokemon Go and you're looking at the screen and using GPS continuously. You're jogging, it's taking a quick reading and then powering down. So it probably wouldn't be as big a hit.
But it's the point you made all along, Andy, which is that Watch 1 was all about figuring out what the hell is this? How are people going to use it? What are the features people want and don't want? And Apple presumably has a significant amount of data now and can make Watch 2 be the evolution. And clearly they've said... Or they've
Friends
seen.
Hub, no. Fitness, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, just look at how different the watchOS 2 is to watchOS 1. Things that were just fundamental. This button that's just for nothing but your 12 friends. Okay, no, we're going to make this for something else. And glimpses that are always, okay, no, we're going to allow you to simply have a carousel of apps that go from left to right. I'm going to love seeing whatever major update they make to the hardware, because that's going to be the direct answer to the question, what did Apple learn after observing people using their watch for a year and a half to 2 years. I'm not sure that they would, that they're going to. The only thing that makes me a little bit skeptical of the idea of a watch new hardware this year is that I think that the next thing they do with the watch is going to be not just we're adding a barometer or just we're adding a GPS to what we've got now. I think that they're going to say, if we have to do new tooling to get these new batteries, these new components inside this thing, we're going to rethink things like the digital crown. We're going to rethink things like, do we want to place this button on a corner so it's easier to press without having to sort of torque the watch on the band? Things like that. I think that when they do new hardware, it's just not going to be we're putting new stuff inside the old case. I think they're going to rethink and enhance what they built 2 years ago.
So you guys credit this rumor that it does seem possible.
It's not insane. They're not. He's not proposing things that would be really hard for Apple to do. So
he does say, do not expect LTE support.
Yeah,
until next year.
Yet. Like Renee said, it's hard.
It's hard. It's battery draining, et cetera, et cetera.
I think he talked about this then as well, and they maybe put it in another post or something. But there's also rumors of a retooled Apple Watch 1, which if Apple follows their existing strategy, the
smart
new one would come out, and then the old one would be held on
cheap
at the lower price level. Yeah.
Make it cheap.
So that resurfaces the old question we were debating a couple years ago, that if you spent $1,000 on a stainless steel watch or, God forbid, $12,000 on a gold one, are they going to let you swap out the if they do it in such a way that you could do, it seems as though the dimensions and the hardware buttons are the same, would they do some sort of a trade-in rebate? Would they allow you to do some sort of a give us your watch, we'll send it back a week later with new guts, the new hardware it needs, and the new software? Or for $1,000, do you get the nostalgia of saying, no, no, you see, what you don't understand is classical hand-tooled software of 2015. They don't make software like this anymore.
I could actually see the people with the stainless steel watch worrying about that more than some people with the gold watch. Like, it was one person who bought three of them for his dog because buying four of them would be gauche. And it's probably, they probably already dropped them, you know, into some corner somewhere and haven't looked at them again. And they'll just, but did I have one of these before? I don't know. Buy me three. And that sounds a little bit like, that sounds like, I don't know, flippant, but Apple's market for this was the people who pay $25,000 for a plane ticket from London to Dubai, buy a $20,000 dress and wear it once. They want an Apple Watch, but they only buy gold watches. So this solves that problem for them. And it's a totally different sort of market than anything else that goes on. The people who spend $1,200 to $1,500 for a stainless steel watch, I could see them going, well, wait a minute, you know, $1,000 on my wrist. Now this one looks way better. It's another $1,000. I don't know what to do.
Well, I for one am ready to spend a lot of money on a new Apple product. I just don't know what it'll be. Maybe it'll be. You read the kind of scathing article from The Verge about Apple. So angry. Verge used to be thought of as kind of a Apple fan site. Maybe they've overcome that. This was an opinion piece.
Well, if it was Neely, then
Sam Byford. Apple should stop selling four-year-old computers. This is what we've been talking about, of course, for some time, that some of these computers, not all, are superannuated.
The OG MacBook Pro with the spinning optical disc.
Yeah. On the other hand, I've seen rebuttals that say, well, you know, it's not like Intel has made massive improvements in its processors. What is it about the, for instance, the Mac Pro that you would want upgraded? I mean, you're not going to...
It's a concession. It's like, it's the same reason they kept the iPad 2 on the market for so long, is that there are people who want to either buy, you know, a truckload of them, or there are people who just, they want a MacBook, but they want an optical drive. And Apple said that's not the future. None of our products are going to have that going forward. But we have the last model we made, and we'll keep this on the market for as long as we possibly can. And if you really, really, really want that optical disc, you can find it buried somewhere on the store and, you know, enjoy. But for everyone else, here's our shiny new MacBook Pro with the OLED.
And instead of meeting you at the door at the Apple store, we will make you walk all the way back to pick it up and then walk all the way forward while people line and say, shame, 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 shame. And we will live stream it.
More understandable. Like, the Mac Pro is hard to understand because, you know, even if Intel wasn't quick with the Xeon chips, there's graphics cards that could be updated on that. So that to me is just hard to understand why they made such a big deal about it. You know, the very famous Phil Schiller, not even anymore my ass, and then just let it lie fallow for 3 years. Yeah. But the Mac, letting people have
that,
a Mac Pro.
That comment is now biting him in the same place, I have to say. This is Joel Ruska's response in Extreme Tech. And I think Joel actually makes a good point. Apple's stagnant product lines, he doesn't deny it, mostly reflect the state of the computer industry. You know, Apple, yeah, it'd be great if Apple could update it. But there's not a lot of compelling new hardware to put in there.
And that's the point with the Mac Pro delay. Well, I mean, if you want to call it a delay, is that Apple had the choice of putting just the latest generation chips in there and shipping them as is. And, you know, it's almost like a cliche now. Apple's designs have been imitated by almost everybody, sometimes creatively, sometimes exactly. Every Ultrabook pretty much looks like a MacBook Air. Most of the higher books look like a MacBook Pro. There's just nothing exciting there. And Apple does not like doing unexciting things. So they decided to maybe take a gamble and try something a little bit different. You know, maybe that's the OLED strip, maybe it's Touch ID, but that proved to be harder to bring to market than maybe their original timeline suggested. So instead of a Skylake bump, we're now, you know, 3 months past WWDC and hoping that it arrives in September. But otherwise, it would have been just that, an incremental update that would have helped a small percentage of people who really would have found a difference in either the battery savings or the clock speed. And now you have a chance, and maybe it'll succeed, maybe it won't, but now you have a chance, you know, to put something new on the market. And I think that's what Apple strives to do.
Had they, of course, done that, you know, just shipped out a new shiny with slight upgrade, I might have, and others might have said, oh, they're just trying to get you to buy new stuff without much of an improvement.
Boring.
It's just, it's all about money. It's all about, and there is, I mean, I think people who complain, including myself, we just want a new computer every few years. It's not that you need one.
Apple wants to sell them. I mean, it's upset that we are, that there aren't new MacBook Pros there. Can you, everyone in Apple retail, everyone in Apple,
they would love it, wouldn't they?
They are like, and they have to. They have to smile and grit their teeth. There is nothing else they can do. They know exactly when that computer is you know, meant to be on market. What's happening with it? What everyone is saying about it? And they know, like, this is when we can bring it to market. And they're just smiling, and they're missing, you know, they're missing education sales right now. I'm sure they're not happy about that one bit.
Yeah.
But the other side of the coin is that a lot of people, they don't have the luxury of waiting a year. Sometimes, like, their MacBook is just dead. Again, they dropped it off a cliff. It's dead. Or they need to buy 18 new Mac Minis or iMacs because that's what they have to build out a new office. And if they look, if they're saying, geez, if we even if they had the, they would love to have the benefit of 2 years of incremental updates, because they would have something that's even a little bit more modern, as opposed to we're going to buy it. And then 4 months from now, that's when Apple feels as though they've come down from the mountain and changed the stone tablets of, we now have the new CPU and we now have this new interface thing. And we now have this new multi-touch screen thing that we were saving for when we thought the time was right, even though we had this pretty much ready to go a year ago or 2 years ago, only just to in pieces and parcels. And it's like, okay, great, but I just spent $12,000 on computers that are still about 2 or 3 years old. And if you just simply stopped focusing on making the best, waiting until you could make this the best version it could possibly be, and instead gave a little bit more time thinking about, what about the person who's buying a new MacBook right now? Can we make the best thing for that person right now? That person's going to feel a little minus.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Talk more. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie, the iMore family of products. The iMore conglomerate. The Keiretsu.
The Halliburton of tech journalism.
The Halliburton of tech journalism. They just keep on going. You know what doesn't keep on going oftentimes? Your Wi-Fi. How many times have... Why are they showing Renee? Why are you showing Renee? Look at this man.
I'm a Wi-Fi dead zone leader.
Watch this man. Does he look happy about his Wi-Fi? No. He's suffering. He's suffering because he's not using Eero. I have to say, Eero won me over. Eero got a lot of attention when they first came out. The idea being you can do a better job with a Wi-Fi router. But I had to be convinced, and I was. And let me put it this way. I don't have any choice because Lisa won't let me take the Eero out now. She says she's been complaining for so long about our Wi-Fi dropping packets, buffering, just not working. And I said, well, let's try this Eero thing. And now, you know, that's it. She's done. She's found it. I keep saying, is the Wi-Fi okay? She says, what do you mean? Of course, it's great. It's Eero. Eero. Look, we know that the single, you know, router model isn't working in a lot of homes because of several things. Congestion. A lot of people have many Wi-Fi access spots in their vicinity. But it's also because our houses are a little bit more spread out. We got metal in the walls, and there's an upstairs, a downstairs. Eero is the first home Wi-Fi system that blankets your entire house in fast, reliable Wi-Fi. No more buffering, no more dead zones. Wi-Fi that works. It's essentially an enterprise Wi-Fi system, but it's easy to use. And this is really what they've done that's so brilliant. You set it up using your iPhone, or you can use an Android phone if you want. It walks you through the process. The Eero lets you manage your network from the phone, including port forwarding, port reservations, all the things that you'd want to do. It's, of course, state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption, really good customer support, and I've called them just to test it out, and it's fabulous. And it looks good. It's not one of those things with big, it's not like a spider. It looks like just a little lozenge. Now, you can buy one at a time, but I bought the 3-pack, and now what's nice is I can add additional. As you grow, you can add additional. There is a 30-day money-back guarantee. It could not be easier to set up. A friend of mine just bought an Eero on my recommendation, because I've been talking about it for some time, as you probably know. But he hasn't set it up yet. And he says, is it going to be easy? I said, yes, it's going to be easy. It's very easy. Eero.com. If you use the offer code MacBreak, you'll get free overnight shipping. So you need not suffer a moment longer. Have it tomorrow if you order today. Eero.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. And by tomorrow evening, your wife will say, what'd you do to the Wi-Fi, honey? This is amazing. It's really fast. It's really easy. It really works. EERO.com. Eero. Don't forget the MacBreak offer code for free overnight shipping. Get better Wi-Fi pronto. Stat. Yeah, you can't pry that Eero out of my cold, dead fingers. It's actually, it's done some things that I cannot figure out how to do, or I couldn't figure out how to do on my Asus. Port reservations is great. So you say this, because I want a server on it, right? And then it was, and then I had a weird Comcast configuration. I didn't know how weird it was until, you know, the Eero fixed it. And it was like, oh, wow, this is great. So it's pretty sophisticated. I replaced Airport Extremes with Eero. Somebody's asking in the chat room. Much
yeah,
better.
Yeah, talk about unupdated products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And
honestly,
and,
it seems like one of the cheapest things you can do to change and improve your entire life inside the house is to go through your house, go through your entire network, any box that has a power supply that is more than 5 years old, just don't even think about it. Yeah. Buy a new one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just replaced my cable modem, and suddenly all the software and services that I could not get to work are suddenly plug and play again. And it's like, my God, it's like I did not realize how dirty my glasses were until someone handed me a lens wipe, and suddenly, oh, that's what I've been missing.
It really is kind of like, oh, the future is here.
Yeah, they came and replaced my modem too, and it's not a faster modem, but it's got a higher level of aggregation. So yeah. it's hard to explain the difference. It's still fast, but it just works so much better.
Mine's even faster, actually. It really made a big difference in speed, mostly like on those areas where in the past the speed was going down because Wi-Fi wasn't strong, the signal wasn't strong. It's 5 bars everywhere. In fact, it's a little bit of a problem because I'm playing Pokemon Go in the house on Wi-Fi, and I'm walking up the street, and the handoff doesn't occur till like I'm down to like a block away. So it's like, you know, I want to go to LTE now. And it looks like something Apple would have designed, actually. It's quite beautiful.
I really hope that if Apple surprises us with something that no one has rumored, I hope that that device would be a new networking device. Because you talk about making life better for people in a material and tangible way. You just solve networking problems in someone's house and boom, I will give you $15,000 for the next watch. I'm so grateful for the fact that Wi-Fi works everywhere. It's super fast and it's super secure. And every time I plug something new in, it just works.
Well, it's plumbing now, isn't it? You just expect, you need it. You expect it.
And it would stage all your product updates, keep them cached locally, you know, your iCloud cached locally. I mean, there's so many interesting things they could do with, they finally put out that updated.
How many people come home from like a week in a really, really good hotel, and the first thing they do is arrange to have a new shower head installed? Because they realize that.
I love that rain shower.
I had no idea that since 1978, they've done such wonderful things with shower heads.
Shower heads. Is there anything they can't do?
I thought the shower massage was a great innovation when I was 8 years old.
Mom, come see the shower head.
Don't even bother taking off your clothes.
It's so funny that you say that, because actually I have done that. That's so funny that you say that.
Toilet seat is heated.
What are there any? You think there'll be any unexpected announcements from Apple? By the way, normally in the past we've had a September iPhone and a October iPad announcement. I'm figuring that's not going to happen anymore.
They didn't last year. It was just so much. It's a lot of work for them to coordinate those things, even when they do it at town hall. And if they don't need to, if there's not some big product that they have to show off, and this year it's hard because traditionally for the last few years they would have done iPhone and iPod Touch when that was still a thing right away in September, and then Mac and iPad in October. Last year they did Apple TV and iPhone and iPad Pro and the new Apple Watch Bands all in September, and then the iMac update with the high color resolution was just a press release. So it depends on how they want to do that. If they could stage another massive event, maybe do it at the Civic Center again and have iPhone. And if they bump the iPads to A10 processors too, and the iPads, and maybe the Apple Watch and the MacBook Pros with all those.
Well,
it's a big event.
Ben Lovejoy has once again published a rumor in 9 to 5 Mac that the new MacBooks will feature a fingerprint reader, a Touch ID power button, and this OLED touch panel at the top instead of function keys. That's a significant enough thing that you don't just want to. I just unplugged something. What did I just unplug there? Is it working again? I kicked something.
You don't want that in a press.
You don't want that in a press release. You want to say something about it. You want Phil Schiller wants to say innovation. My keister.
It's also storytelling, like we were talking right. about at the top of the show. If and when Apple deletes the headphone jack, there's going to be a story behind it of how they arrived at this decision and the possibilities that are possible now that they've done this. And if they do something as wonderful, as cool as that's the idea of having an OLED function key strip, that is such an instinctively cool idea. They're going to want to show that off, and they're going to want to say that it's not just being able to change the color of these keys and to put a Internet Explorer icon up there when Internet Explorer closes. Here is how it's going to change and improve your day to day life with this thing.
I'm sorry. That hurt. I'm under the table. I'm sorry.
try. Post down.
Ow! I just hit you, Renee. No, I got it. It's all
okay. Be okay. Be trooper.
It reminds me. Remember the Art Lebedev OLED keyboard with the changing keycaps?
Yes. Yeah.
How many years ago was that? A decade ago. We're finally actually making something like that, right?
Yeah, and mainstreaming.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Way. Yeah. I think there have been gaming keyboards, and I know I've seen OLED strips on what are those things that DJs and musicians use where they tap them? The MPV.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, controllers. So it's not even really tough technology, but it would be really cool to have it.
It goes beyond just simply having 12 keycaps that do things when you press them. It goes into things like doing Photoshop and being able to keep your color palette right there. Mm-hmm. Like when you need this color, you tap on it. Or when you're making an adjustment, suddenly this becomes a 1,000-step slider that runs the 12 inches wide, as opposed to carefully trying to scroll and too much. No, a little bit too much. So that's if not only it exists, but also Apple allows developers full access to it and to make it do whatever they want it to do. That would be pretty astounding. That would make me wish that I spilled Diet Dr. Pepper on my laptop this year. And so
I know. Well, here's the other thing I'm really could be very excited about. And this is again from same article in 9to5 Mac. This is based on pictures of the chassis, 4 USB-C ports, no MagSafe adapter anymore. USB-C would be used for power with embedded support for the new Thunderbolt 3 standard. That would make me really interested in this.
Yeah.
I'd have to buy one then.
Yeah, it'd be not for it. I still stand by the idea that a MacBook Pro should require as few dongles as possible, but that could be such a butt kicker for the MacBook Nothing or the MacBook Air. The idea of having, because you can transport everything across USB-C, it's a wonderful cable standard. It would bring Apple back into the fold of we are using the exact same sort of connectors that everybody else is using, so you're not going to force you to carry another connector with you. It would kill the MagSafe 2 connector, which is something I would love to do because it just keeps popping out for absolutely no reason. And so you put it on
your lap, Andy. That's why it popped out.
It's great so long as you keep the MacBook on your desk and you also have gaffer tape taping the cord down
onto the MacBook. No, I think that's great too. I mean, I'm a little bit sad that DisplayPort, whatever 1.4, didn't make it into Thunderbolt 3 standard, which is the big beefy one that we're all hoping for. It's not even making it into Cannon Lake, which is the next TikTok after the current after Skylake already. So a little bit sad about the display future, but I think that's a phenomenal port. It'll work with all the accessories they've already made for the MacBook, and it's just I'm super looking forward to see. I want to buy it now. Can I buy it now, Apple? Sorry, I'm losing it here. I just want that MacBook.
Well, according to rumors and 9to5 Mac, we'll be getting one this year. And if they're going to do it, they're going to do it at the same time they announce the iPhones. They have to, right? Unless you're going to do an October or November event.
Oh, my understanding is it was very similar to Apple TV last year, is that originally targeted at WWDC, couldn't make it in by then, right. So it's retargeted in September because that's the next big event.
So this may be a super event to coming up in...
Fire everything!
Yeah, in less than a month.
What do you think that the idea of having a huge keynote ready facility on campus 24/7 is going to do to Apple's release schedule? Are they going to now think that if they had something that they were targeting for WWDC, that if they decided they need an extra 5 weeks, they will do the event on the second week of August? Or are they still going to say, okay, well, we don't feel like we want to have an event anytime we want to throw an event, we still think we want to keep to a predictable window so that people know, people can at least, we can't talk about what we're going to be doing, but people can at least anticipate that we might have something interesting to talk about or interesting hardware they might want to budget for in September of any given year.
I think, yeah, that would be super handy. I think the events team is still, like, all Apple teams are small and they work incredibly hard, and I don't know how easy it is for them to do multiple events. But if they have the home base advantage, maybe that is something that they can, maybe they can't do that many more. Maybe they could do one or two more a year to sort of fit their schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just, you know, invite people in, have a coffee, say, hey, by the way, as long as you're here. Got some
new September event is all of September. Come anytime you want. Yeah. Bugs are there. Yeah.
I bet you they're craving this new campus.
We're crazy like that.
Yeah. I could see them doing stuff like that.
You yourself know that you're sitting in the results of what happens when you no longer have to simply work in a place that you have adapted to suit. You've adapted yourself. Like, what
purpose
build
is
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a bathroom right outside the studio so that we can do things during commercial breaks instead of just doing this for 20 minutes because it's a 30-second ad read.
Yeah, my Iron Man suit is right outside the door. I walk in, it puts it on, I fly out. Yep.
Actually, I'm a little nervous because in the new studio, it's like many a radio station I've worked in, the bathroom is on the other side of a self-locking door. It's near. I can run out. But the door will lock behind me, and I'm just dreading the day that I'm going, let me in!
Please! Okay,
so the record's running out!
The answer to that is you have a panel behind glass with a hammer on a chain next to it. Behind that is an Ethernet port, a camera, and a microphone.
I'm out here in the hall finishing Mac Break Weekly. What are we going to do about that, John?
And special mobile studio C. We're in the mobile.
I'll bring my Mevo with me at all times.
Live from the head.
What are our plans for that, John? What do you think? We can't hang a key out there because that's a public entrance. People could walk in. Escort? We're going to escort me and have a door minder.
It's that or a bedpan at the set.
I think I just clip the key fob to my shirt like a 4-year-old. I have keys sewn into my clothing.
Can't you have an NFC lock that your phone can just...
It is NFC. Oh, okay. But it doesn't work. Does it work with a phone? Now, that would be a good one. No, it's a fob system, though. Why doesn't it work with a phone? We should have gotten
something. The truckers call the motorman's helper.
They'll never let me do this.
Keep that under the desk.
That's why when you say purpose built, it's a dream. True, Andy, but there are limits. I think Lisa just said no.
Okay. No phone for you.
No phone for you. Planet of the apps. We now know the. I don't even.
You damn dirty ass.
Damn you.
Can't innovate my ass.
I really. O'Malik was marvelous on Twitter on Sunday. He said, Apple needs to focus on doing the job better, not on pathetic reality shows. However, I have other problems with Planet of the Apps. I think it's going to, unfortunately, create a whole generation of kids who think, you know, just like I could, you know, like Survivor. Oh, it's easy. You just make an app and you get Will I Am, one of the judges, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Gary Vaynerchuk. These are the judges.
Isn't Will I Am still making his own BlackBerry in the Rim Labs? I'm confused.
Oh, yeah. What happened? Yeah.
I don't know.
Still making his own car based on the GMC, the DeLorean. Yeah.
It's, I don't.
I'm confident that these new apps are going to be every bit as successful as the box office results of every Project Runway movie.
Yeah.
I think that every band that was on MTV's Making the Band is going to be as successful.
Project Greenlight. Project Runway. Project Runway did develop. A couple of designers have come out of Project Runway that have been quite successful, though, right?
And the thing with this is that this is a different team, so it's not like they took people off the MacBook project to put them on this. So like it is a different team, but
I understand it still distracts, right?
No, so the goal for this is once you go all in with Apple, it's the same thing with Netflix and them doing original programming, and why Amazon is doing original programming is once you have a subscription service, it's a very different model than just a purchase service. You have to provide content that people are going to not just want to buy, but want to subscribe to
it's
your
exclusive
service.
And
then not unsubscribe. So it's like Game of Thrones. Are we going to just let go of HBO after it's ended? Or are we going to stay on because, oh, this other cool thing? And you want to drive subscriptions. And Apple is willing to do that with both audio and video. And like audio, they did the Taylor Swift deal. They've done a few others. They've been, Tim Cook has been helping out with videos, apparently. But with this, they have a chance to make original programming. And whether it's Dr. Dre's music show, or it's Planet of the Apps, or it's Carpool Karaoke. It's just ways to get people to see this and go, oh, I want to see more of this. I'm going to subscribe to Apple Music. And then it just drives the adoption of that service. It's a very, very nice.
I understand. Key. And if Apple's cloud services were working perfectly and they were creating new products and innovating, I would be less critical. But it seems like this is where Apple's innovating, and that's not exciting.
Well, no, they've got a lot of interest now. And I don't mean financial interest. I mean that like a creator can, just like the Beatles, it took them a while to go from, hey, we're four lads who are doing like jangly love songs, to Revolver, and then to and then to everything they're doing after that. They're expanding their level of interest. And there isn't, it's not like there's a fixed number amount of interest and a fixed amount of attention that Apple can pay. They can have, they got so many people. They got such a big campus that they can have a group working on this sort of stuff. So I don't think that's going to I don't think it's going to distract them from whatever they feel their mission is. I see this more as a really low risk way to experiment with original content without making a big deep end of the pool splash into it. I think that Renee makes a good point. I think that Apple would love to have be as important a driver of original content as Netflix is. And Netflix is as powerful as any independent studio has been in the past 50 years of the film industry. I don't think they're at a point yet where they can hope to do that. But what they can do is they can produce a couple of things that are very natural fits for Apple that can be either a huge success or just be something they did. They said that we're glad we made it and we're not going to have, and then they never make another one again. Just like, remember there's a time where Apple was sort of hit or miss between whether they're going to be live streaming keynote events and things like that. You never knew if they were going to do it. And maybe they wouldn't even announce it until a couple days before. A lot of those were trial balloons of, we don't know if we have the server capacity. We're going to use this as an experiment to see, can we handle, can we serve a huge amount of data to random people at a live event in a way that's consistent? And they could do that without announcing, we're here today to announce we're going to be a live streaming company. We have a live streaming product that's perfect and will revolutionize the industry. It's not a problem if 2 days before you never announced that you're going to be live streaming this event, you decide that you can't live stream the event. Similarly, with this thing, if they have, it does anything that results in any viewership whatsoever is a success with these original content. And then they come to the problem of who's going to be our Jimmy Iovine of attracting filmmakers and TV producers to produce original content for Apple TV, because that's the biggest problem of them all.
Actually, Ohm said buy Netflix.
That's interesting, because Apple Music is on Android and Netflix is on everything. I think my toaster has Netflix now.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of maybe writing all that code.
Yeah. I don't know if they're for sale, but Apple certainly has the cash to do it.
Or like Alex says, buy Disney, Disney. Or just get into the programming.
Right. They also have an exclusive on Carpool Karaoke, but it won't be James Corden doing it. So I don't know if you really can carry...
I heard that it wasn't originally him. It was a different DJ started with Taylor Swift, and then he sort of adopted the segment. So maybe
as I pointed out on Sunday, this is a long tradition. I mean, it goes back not just to Jerry Seinfeld, the comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, but before that, Robert Llewellyn of Red Dwarf, who did Carpool, which is wonderful. Was it Carpool?
Yep, Carpool.
Yeah, I was a guest.
Yep.
You were too. It was great. Bobby's not doing it anymore, but... That was, I think, the earliest of these. And there is something magical about getting people together in a car. You let your hair down. I mean, if you
get... show and you're host-proof, right?
Yeah. But I do also think that James Corden is what makes Carpool Karaoke good.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll see.
They'll have to find someone just as fun.
I hope it's not Gary Vaynerchuk. Right?
She could take over.
Michelle's got some time. we'll see. I feel like Apple... fix iTunes.
I think we'll see. I'm very familiar with this sort of reaction, because it's something that I've been navigating myself. And I think that a lot of it isn't Apple's fault. It's that a lot of us old timers have this picture of Apple and who they are and what they're supposed to be. And I think that I can only speak for myself. In my defense, I think that a lot of that sort of criticism is correct, or at least it's very rational. But nonetheless, some of this sort of criticism doesn't allow Apple to become something that I personally don't want it to be, even though it's something that they can do really well, even though there is a percentage of the people that would be much better served by this new version of Apple than by whatever old version of Apple that I'm imagining. And finally, whatever Apple was 10 years ago, it's only what I imagine that it was. It's not what it actually was, because I've never worked for Apple. I've never, only someone who's worked at the vice president level or above can correctly talk about here is what the purpose of Apple is, right, and here is what the focus is.
It's certainly
so
them.
We got to kind of lose it.
It's theirs to, modify or fix. This is a long think piece with Tim Cook from Fast Company. It was actually because they talk about right at the beginning Eddie Q being disappointed about the Warriors' loss in the NBA playoffs. So the interview goes back a few months. I think this is heresy to say, especially on an Apple podcast. I think the jury's still out on whether Tim Cook has the vision to take Apple into the next thing. There's no question he's a very good steward of the status quo. I don't see that vision. And I hate to see Eddie Q and Phil Schiller decide what Apple's going to be.
I would never make that accusation about Tim, only because Mr. Cook, only because it's such an abstract sort of thing that someone with vision.
Well, you have to judge a company by what they're doing.
Yeah, but it's the company that Tim Cook has in 2016 is not the same company that Steve Jobs had in 2007.
No, I agree, and I'm just saying, based on what the company in 2016 is, I don't know if Tim's really doing a good job.
Again,
it's profitable.
I can't say plus or minus. I think that it's, again, such an abstract concept, and also, Evel Knievel jumping buses at age 27 is exciting and awesome.
Right.
Evel Knievel at age 68, he shouldn't be jumping buses. He should be teaching the next generation. He should be designing motorcycles that will jump buses, and he should be designing safety equipment.
Yeah.
Apple might be the company that's better at running the infrastructure and creating the tools that young people use to create the next greatest thing, rather than trying to create the next greatest thing. Now that they have the burden of they have to continue to support itself at their current scale.
Yeah.
Remember that the most of the engineering of a bridge is into making sure the weight of the bridge does not cause the bridge itself to collapse. And when a company gets to be a certain size, that in itself becomes a great amount of the work and the money and the time and the effort that goes into running the company.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to say, A, who am I to say? B, just because they're not doing what I want them to do doesn't mean they're doing the wrong thing. C, the stock market loves them. D, they're making a ton of money. So by every reasonable metric, they're doing fine. Apple saying we're going to do, TV shows and we can't fix iTunes and iCloud's falling apart, I mean,
it's all like one of the hardest things here is competing with a ghost, because no matter what Tim Cook does, he'll never be Steve Jobs.
No, and I
don't
want
know what Steve Jobs would be like today. Like if Steve Jobs had to run a modern Apple, he might not be temperamentally or, he might have a different skill set. And the trick to Apple has always been a dynamic. Like as much as Steve Jobs was in front, the old saying was, only Steve Jobs could think of an iPad, but only Tim Cook could have made a chip.
Understand.
They just need, Tim Cook can be that position. He can be that person. They just need to figure out what that product person is to complement him the same way he complimented Steve Jobs. And maybe it's Johnny Ive, and maybe it's three or four people to make that dynamic. And once that clicks, maybe it's clicked now, and we're in a lot of turbulence, and it's hard to see.
Yeah,
but I think that as long as you have those sort of pillars, you can build a phenomenal foundation on them.
Yeah. I'm just raising the issue. I agree. It sounds, it's stupid, and I probably shouldn't say it. But I'm starting to get this niggling feeling that I'm just not crazy about. And you're right, Andy. I'm nostalgic about the way Apple used to be.
But they're also facing Steve Jobs at his height, like at that iPhone press conference. That was something new and amazing.
Right.
It was something we really hadn't seen before, and we filled that gap. All that slack has been taken up now, and it's really unclear there will not be another iPhone style product. It's just the laws, like the opportunities, the things have to come together to make that happen, to make a business more profitable than Exxon that you hold in your hand. Right. It's just stupefying. So Tim Cook is living in a world where he came into this job with iPhone and iPad being done. And it's sort of his job. All right. Steve Jobs got the car to 200 and we're saying, okay, Tim, get it to 300.
Right.
And he's like, what's a car?
Right.
You know, so he's got to invent a plane and that takes a long time.
Yep. Yep. Let's take a break. We'll take the August update on the Apple campus is in. We're getting close. It's almost done. And we have lots more to talk about, including a dolphin that stole. Well, it did what many of us want to do. Took the iPad out of the hand of a lady who wasn't watching the show. Dolphins are smart. Now, I hope you're watching the show. Probably what the lady was doing on her iPad was reading a magazine on texture. That's what I have been doing. If you're bored, if you're on an airplane, if you're at the supermarket.
What a pro. What a pro. That is decades of professional broadcasting, ladies and gentlemen.
I do these for you, Andy. Texture lets you read the best magazines without you're not really subscribing to them. You're subscribing to Texture, which gives you literally dozens, hundreds of magazines on your iPad, your iPhone, your tablet. You can read them anytime. And it's, you know, what I love about it is you not only get the magazines you probably would subscribe to, the New Yorker for me or National Geographic, Popular Science, People or Us, Rolling Stone. These are magazines that are so good every month or every week that you're going to want to get every edition. And of course, you do. But you also get things like, I don't know, Ad Age, which I probably wouldn't want to read every week. But sometimes there's really good stuff in there, or recipes from, you know, Bon Appetit, or maybe you want to know what the Billboard charts are. Are you going to run out to the store and if you could even buy a copy of Billboard? You're certainly not going to subscribe. It's hundreds of dollars a year. You get all of this on your iPad in Texture. And it's, by the way, the whole magazine. It's all of Consumer Reports. It's all of Vanity Fair. It's all of Rolling Stone. Every page. You even get benefits that you can't get in a print magazine. Bonus features like video, search, that kind of stuff. You also get past magazines, you know, and what you don't get is the coffee table clutter, the great expense, and the kind of, you know, the feeling I'm killing trees and I didn't read that magazine this year. Over 200 of the world's best magazines in one app. Try it free right now. Texture.com/twit. And I'll tell you a little pro tip, a little secret. One account, access on up to 5 devices. So basically think of it as a family plan. Lisa has the subscription, but I read my magazines on my iPad. She reads her magazines on her iPad. It is great. It's like Netflix for magazines. Texture, texture.com/twit. Try it free. And then I think you'll probably want to subscribe. It's especially for summertime. Beach reading, man, it's awesome. Texture.com/twit. Here, ladies and gentlemen, the Apple campus in 4K. I don't know if this is HDR or not. It's starting to take shape. Still a lot of sand. A lot of piles of sand.
How much milk you're going to need for that donut?
Oh, man. You know, it's 1 mile in circumference, 1,500 meters across, a garden and a pond. The reason that all the sand, it's going to be inside, it'll be a garden and a pond. 100,000 square foot.
Because they didn't have at least one rally cross day during the construction.
It's not over yet.
I can't respect them.
Look at baseball and tennis courts. You know, of course, the challenge for any company in Silicon Valley is to attract the best talent right out of college. And this is how you do it. You have an amazing campus with all these 100,000 square foot fitness center right there. So people stay and work late and they want to work there.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only that, but
that's the security kiosk. Yeah. Those are machine gun turrets, aren't they?
For the first time, I'm thinking, if they're building everything that they could possibly hope and dream of, are there like not cells, but like secure, walkable rooms with cameras in them where they can take people who are naughty at events? Or at least that they schedule a meeting someplace where they know that they're at least communicating that if you wanted to fight us, we would.
I don't think there's Apple jail. I really don't. I hope
not. Like Disney, it's underground.
Yeah. Don't you think, though, they're going to have to build a pretty big wall around this thing? Because I want to immigrate.
This is the role of architecture. When a company reaches a certain level, it's not just we need to house a certain number of people and we need a certain facility. It's also we want to build a permanent structure on the planet that when people go by it, it distinctly communicates who we are.
Right.
And ideally, in 100 years, we'll still be here and this will still be an expression of if we had a flag, if we had our own money, we would have this on our money and on our flag.
The only thing that makes me sad is that, in fact, I will never be allowed through those gates. Ever. Ever.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Do I have to be the Dean Martin that gets Jerry Lewis?
No, I don't.
Do I have to be the Frank Sinatra who gets Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin back together? I'm so tired of you saying
that. You called him. No. That's fine. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Go visit iTunes there.
And meanwhile, we're rolling glue on the floor of our tiny little studio. Our studio would fit in that parking lot. There you go. The new Aptal campus. Oh, they're putting in the carpet now. Look at that. Oh, here's the Round Theater. The Round Theater. Show this. This is going to be the new place where they're going to show. It does look like Minecraft, doesn't it?
Oh, and then if the press are bad, they're going to flood it with water.
Yeah.
Now that I look at it, I so want that entire structure to be retractable.
Yeah.
That could just flatten down to the bottom and become like a baseball pool.
The reason it looks like Minecraft, those are foam blocks that they put on top of the underground structures for insulation, and they'll put dirt on top of that.
That's how they pack more batteries into the terrace. By staggering that terraced layout.
I love this. Look at all the solar cells. These will be on top of the parking structure and the building itself.
Yeah. Rene, let's compare notes. Have you two decided? Here are the 11 people I know at Apple that can give me the biggest tour of this place when it's done, and the order in which I will start hinting that I want to spend 2 days just being given a tour of this place.
Mm.
It really looks incredible.
We promise Apple to give you good coverage forever if you just let us bring our cameras in.
Can we have a review unit? I mean, please.
Exactly.
I want a review unit of the Apple campus too. Yes, I do. Yes. Look at that. Wow. These drone shots are incredible. And the drone is like right next to the building, right next to the crane. You got at this point, thank you, Matthew Roberts, for making this. At this point, you got to figure Apple is. And by the way, what have I done to deserve this, YouTube? Every time I watch a YouTube video, they suggest bikini clad. I just watched the Apple campus. So the GoPro, that makes sense. Space in 4K, more Apple campus videos. Sure.
By all means, keep the picture up.
What? I don't watch those videos. I don't know why they keep proffering them to me.
I know. It's weird.
It's probably SEO. They probably keyword stuffed it with Apple Campus.
Apple Campus? Oh, he must want to see bikinis.
Yeah. No, the bikini video is like, let's get all those Apple Campus video views. I'm just going to – Apple Campus too, Apple Donut, Apple Spaceship.
Well, and plus it's YouTube, so you know that is one frame in a four-hour video that has nothing else
about
of interest.
Carrots.
But I'm starting to wonder about the drone footage though. I recently have to get an FAA drone operator's license for a project that I'm going to be doing in the next couple months. And so I had to start looking at what the rules are. And at least in Massachusetts, you're prohibited against flying it over private property unless you have permission of the property owner.
I think that's nationwide. I think that's an FAA rule.
Yeah, that's FAA. So I'm not suggesting anything. Nor am I doing the national political candidate thing of saying I don't know what's going on as a way of suggesting that I know what's going on and that this is what's going on. I'm curious as to how often you could. I'm curious if the unofficial policy inside of Apple is that actually we've seen these videos, they're really, really cool. We're going to turn a blind eye and we're not gonna use we're not gonna use one of those cranes to try to swat it away, even though we have the software that could absolutely do that.
And I'd like to say if you want to take drone footage of the new Twit Studios, be my guest.
Just leave the back door open until Leo can get in.
Would you leave the back door open? We have the Nest Cam. Thank God we have the Nest Cam.
Okay.
There you go. Boy, that's gripping. Gripping footage of the guy putting the carpet squares on the previously glued raised floor.
Put a chat room monitor in the bathroom. That way the chat room can tell John if you get locked.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's an audio feed that people want to check in on. That's a great idea.
No, right? Just,
just the chat room. Oh. I'm stuck in the bathroom. Tell John. Tell Karsten.
That sounds like a great Arduino project. Just a big red button that if you slap it, it just does nothing but like send something to the cat saying, okay, I'm locked in the bathroom.
That's all we do. We have a little, we have a doorbell in effect that could be the, it could be this, that was easy button. And you slap it.
And it just orders more, and then more toilet paper arrives. Yeah, still right.
Oh, damn it. Who used the dash button? Apple is finally.
Get me
Apple,
out of here or get me a USB charger.
For a long time, Apple eschewed bug bounties.
Yes.
Saying this is a bad idea because it just encourages people to find bugs. No, because it we don't want to get in the position of paying people to find bugs because we can't compete with the government, which will give you $1 million. I don't know. There are lots of reasons, but they're doing it now. Weirdly, though, it's invite only. Explain that to me, Renee. I don't understand that at all.
So I had a chance to talk to the people behind the program at Apple, and what they said is there's two things. One is the reason they're doing it is because they feel like exploits are getting much more difficult to find. As iOS has been hardened, it's rare.
Oh, that's a good spin. Oh, our stuff has gotten so secure. We've got to pay people to find bugs.
Like they would get reports, but the researcher couldn't afford to spend time on the reports. Like they would just say, we found a bug.
BS!
So it's not that the amount of time a researcher was willing to spend on it was no longer significant because they would find one, hand it off, go on to the next thing. And what Apple wants to do is establish a relationship and actually dedicate Apple engineering resources to the people in this program. And they want to start small and provide a very high level of service so that you have dedicated people to talk to. And they sort of vet it. And they know that, you know, you found this bug. You're going to hand it off. They're going to work with you on it and identifying it, on patching it. And then they're going to grow the program over time. But
how much are they
exclusive.
Paying? Is it a lot of money? It seems like a lot of money. Yeah.
No, it's for a company. It's really good. I mean, I think it goes up to $500,000 for some of the exploit. Sorry, $200,000.
$200,000 for a firmware secure boot exploit. $100,000 for what is that? Extraction of confidential material in the secure enclave. They'll never pay that bounty, I don't think.
And it's up to – there's two really cool things. One is that if you decide, like if you don't need the money, you're going to donate to charity, Apple can match the charitable donation.
Yeah.
So it can be up to double this.
That's nice.
But also, if you find a bug and you're not part of the program, they'll still work with you. It's not exclusive in any way. It's just these are the people they're going to continuously be working with. And if you find something, you just come and tell them, and either they'll just work with you as a one-off or they'll invite you to join the program.
Almost every other company does have a bug bounty program, some of them quite public. And so this is I understand Apple's reluctance to bid up the process. And one of the problems is you get people like Dan Kaminsky, for instance, who every year would collect flaws so that he could win the pwn-to-own contest at Kansas West, and he did for many years.
So many.
And what you really want to do is give these people some incentive not to save up so that they can get a free laptop, but actually get some money so that they can reveal the bug to Apple sooner. And it also incents them not to reveal it publicly, right?
Yeah, and it's a different kind of person. So it's not, doesn't sound like they're really targeting someone who might already be working for organized crime or for, you know, a terrorist network or for a government for that matter. It's people who really are researchers who are in it for doing security research. And either they just need help, they need resources, or if they're already affluent, they just want to do something good. Like there's people who want to do the right thing and disclose to the company in a responsible and ethical way. And it's a way to either help them do that or sort of help fulfill one of their charitable wishes for doing that. It's Apple style. It's very small. They're starting off toe in the water. But I think that once they get a sense of doing it, they'll scale it up.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? The gun emoji. I guess we should talk about that. So
they should have just gone with a phaser.
That's what – who was it that did a phaser for a while? Google or somebody had a ray gun.
Or Han Solo's blaster. Microsoft, ironically, switched the other way.
So Microsoft, that's who did it, right? They had a phaser. So there is an emoji, a gun emoji. Now, the way emojis work, it's part of the Unicode specification. So the Unicode consortium is who determines what emojis are available. They don't actually give you – they give you a description. They don't tell you what the emoji has to look like. So Twitter, Google – Apple, Microsoft, everybody has their own emoji, their own version. Apple decided in iOS 10 to change what looked like, I guess, a 38 police special, something like that, into a squirt gun, clearly a child's toy with an orange tip. And you know what? That's exactly what you'd expect of those hippies. But
they live in apricot orchards.
But I think they're actually prune orchards, but orchards. But no, literally, I think that's the whole Silicon Valley used to be prune orchards. But in fact, the big mall near Apple is called the Prune Yard.
Nice.
Not a great name for a mall. I'm just saying.
But boy, is it regular.
It's historic. I used to get my hair cut at the Prune Yard. There is an interesting issue, and the Emojipedia folks raise this issue, which is it is more than a political statement. You know, when you change the gun for a squirt gun, that's a political statement, right? And we want to make it family friendly or whatever. And actually, I thought it was a great idea. They point out that because people on other platforms will see a realistic looking gun, when you say, and they give an example, when you send a tweet that says, hey, we're going to have a party at the local park 2 o'clock tomorrow, bring your squirt guns, to people on Android, iOS 9, Windows Phone, Samsung, it'll look like you're saying, bring your real pistol. I don't know. Is that a problem?
Well, depends how you've got your contacts.
It's not just that, and it's something that goes beyond just the gun emoji. It's that you're crafting a message on your phone that before you click send makes perfect sense to you, but then when you send it, a different emoji might turn up that modifies even just in a minute way the message that you're sending.
Now, so, here, by the way, is this also from Emojipedia? Bring cookies. And instead of cookies, if you're using a Samsung Galaxy, you get crackers. Oh, well, my God.
Why do you say that on tech meme? I mean, this is such a double standard.
People aren't going to be saying, here's the shopping list. I want you to emoji.
No, do not use emojis for a shopping list.
They're not even crackers.
It's going to be things like someone who is not I don't know, maybe a little bit unsophisticated is going to reply to a text with some serious news with an emoji that they think means on their device means that I'm really, really concerned and sorry for you, but I'm angry at that person who did that wonderful that terrible thing that got you all sad. When it comes on their end, it means there's an eyebrow that is arched on your end is actually double arched on theirs, and it means that, wow, you're such a loser for even being offended by this thing that this sensible person did to you. So emoji can't be – it's a dangerous thing when it's used in place of real conversation as opposed to putting stickers on things. I think stickers are more useful in that sense because they're explicitly, hey, I'm just decorating what I'm saying. This is not the message that I'm actually saying.
Would behoove you – here's an interesting – kind of link baity article from last year on Motherboard. What the emoji you're sending actually looked like to your friends, Megan Neal, did actually collate different emojis from different platforms to there is some disconnect, you know. I mean, you could send a lady in a flamenco outfit and you could get some guy in a t-shirt dancing, right?
I think Gruber identified a really big problem, and that is while Apple changed the icon, they did not align it with the water. So now it's just impossible to actually make a squirt.
The water's coming out the wrong way.
I know. I mean, this is Apple. They're supposed to be designed. My biggest beef is that
when you squirt once at somebody else, you're squirting three times back at yourself.
What I would like Unicode to fix, and maybe someone at Apple can help me, is I need to be able to long press on the French fries and get poutine, tater tots, baked potato, and potato chips.
I think you're right.
That just needs to be solved.
I think we need that.
It's like it's 2016, and I'm sending French fries like an animal.
But it is a deeper problem now that people are actually using it. Another problem that I've seen discussed is how do you do audible text based on this stuff? There are standards for it, but you have to make sure that your first goal is not that you make this thing look cool graphically, but that it absolutely matches the intent that people can't really see what you're doing. Yeah. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's communication. Yeah,
they should have visual standards as well as just a description, because it's something that if it is a standard, it needs to be a standard so that I know that if I send Andy the grimacing face because it makes me like kind of nervous on iOS, he doesn't see me sticking my tongue out at him on Android and wonder, you know, what did I do? Yeah. I mean, that's a real communications problem, and it will only be fixed by having visual standards.
But again, if I can't see the screen, if I'm relying on the OS to speak aloud to me what's on the screen, that's even doubly more important. I think that I don't know what happens. I don't know if there's any sort of facility where if you do a hover or maybe a deep press action on an emoji, it'll say here's what the standard of this describes this as. Is this really what you want to do?
Oh, that's interesting. In that interview with Tim Cook from Fast Company, there was
I'll say that I read it because it was linked so many places. There was a really high ratio of
pros.
The writer describing what the environment was like and the environment at Apple and the news.
A 3-minute interview.
And then there'd be like one quote about, hey, here's how our basketball team is doing. It's like, okay.
And it was a lot of setup. Like Apple is doing, but no, it's not. This problem is struggling, but no, it's not. So it was a lot of.
Now, Rick Tetzeli, by the way, is the guy who wrote this article, is the guy who also wrote, I think, probably the best book about Steve Jobs becoming Steve Jobs. So it's not like this guy doesn't have a lot of experience. He covered Apple for, is it the Post Intelligencer or for a Seattle newspaper, I think. But he's been there for a while.
And, he's a very strong guy.
Yeah. But maybe it was a thin interview. I don't interview CEOs. I don't like to interview CEOs because they're very managed. They know
what
they're...
It looks like he had good access, though. I mean, he was sitting down.
He did. He was in the cafe, right?
Yeah.
He's in the Apple campus.
It depends. I mean, I interviewed the CEO of ASUS for an hour, and it really was a conversation where there was a PR person in the room, but her only interaction was when I had used an idiom that he didn't understand as a non-native English speaker, and he translated.
Interviewing Scott McNeely is always an adventure.
There are CEOs who need to have, like, the PR person wants to be there to jump in front of them because they never know what they're going to say.
But somebody like Tim Cook, a CEO who has self-control, usually says nothing of interest except the company's talking points and is very adept at keeping those
very on message.
Yeah, he's on message. That's the way to put it. However, at EQ, he's completely in this canon.
Warriors, that's where it hurts.
The Warriors, it's killing me. So he was a little sad. It was the day after the Warriors lost the playoffs. He said, we made significant changes to all of our development processes because of the Apple Maps failure. To all of us living in Cupertino, the maps here were pretty good. The problem wasn't obvious to us. We'll never be able to take it out to a large number of users to get feedback. And that's why Apple is now doing the public betas, which I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
They missed it on maps. They don't want to miss it again.
And Maps was a really interesting case because the Maps app itself was pretty well done, but the data, the data aggregation, sanitization, presentation, you would have malformed phone numbers. You know, it's just all these disparate sources just didn't get in there in any really usable way. And that's a problem that beta testing absolutely would have identified for
them. Did they call Apple Maps beta when they released it?
I don't recall.
They should have. That might have made
Siri was in beta.
Right. Siri's still in beta, isn't it?
I think it's been in beta for a long time.
Yeah.
But there is nothing in, no matter how competent, there is no amount of Q&A that can catch what a million, 10 million, 100 million people will find using your software in their day-to-day lives, in their unique use cases. And it is so valuable that if you as a company can set that up, especially at Apple scale, totally not easy because you got to have someone, intercepting all those bugs and checking them and making sure they get to the right place and, getting rid of all the ones that are just random characters and things. But if you can run that, then your software is going to be so much better, which is why I think it's great they're doing that for both iOS and macOS now.
Yeah.
Not only that, but it's an advantage that Google and Microsoft have.
Are
sort
you
of
in the
themselves.
Disney It's a Small World After All exhibit?
You can't tell because behind him it could be anything.
Exactly.
No, actually, I recognize that ringtone. I know exactly what that is.
There's an advantage that, again...
I'm shocked that you use standard ringtones. That's the first thing I change on an iPhone.
Because that's how often I get an actual phone call.
There you go.
The last thing I think to change.
Right.
And also, I need something that I recognize. I don't want to have, like, my favorites. If I have, like, a favorite song or favorite piece of music that I like, if I attach that to a ringtone, my Pavlovian response after a month is like, oh, my God, why is Hey Jude playing?
Right.
I don't know who's playing Hey Jude at me, but I know I'm going to have to now talk to someone that I wasn't prepared to talk to a human being today.
So, I did that with Baba O'Reilly, the great Who song. It's a really good ringtone, but it spoiled the song forever for me. So
exactly.
Yeah.
I was at my comic book shop, bought a new phone, and it was the same as the phone I had in my office. And for like 3 months, I literally bought a new phone for my office because every time I'm at the comic book store, I'm just there to relax, I'm taking a break, and I hear the ATT, like, I know I filed my story before I left the house. Oh, God damn it. What's wrong? What's wrong? Like, okay, I can't.
It's
do
just
that.
The comic book. This is the ringtone for the OnePlus One, which I haven't changed actually because I kind of like it.
It's lovely. It has to, it's ringtones are, it's, I'd love to talk to someone who designs ringtones because you notice that the good ones have to like cover the entire range of human hearing because you don't know where someone is deficient.
Right.
And so there must be such a science in it. And I bet the people who are good at it are good in ways that the rest of us can never figure out why they're so good.
It's like a good jingle writer.
Actually, that's why the marimba, the original iPhone ringtone, is a classic, literally. And you still hear it on TV shows and stuff. And you go, oh, I got an iPhone.
TV shows have just gotten around the planet. Yeah.
But I know Andy has a Samsung phone somewhere nearby.
No, it's a Nexus 5X.
Oh, Nexus. That's what it is. Yes.
But all I was going to say is that in regards of releasing a new software, oftentimes the pain that we experience is in some way self-inflicted. And in Apple, their secrecy and their refusal, their institutional idea of we don't talk about things until we actually ship them, that's a pain that they have invited upon themselves. Google and Microsoft can be at a developers conference and say, here's something we're thinking about doing. And then 3 months later, okay, we're going to let 10,000 people use this new mail service that we're working on. And so not only do they learn about that, but the first waves of people know that this is not designed to be, this is not necessarily the greatest finished polished thing that they've ever made. This is something they're still working on. And so it's so Apple sometimes invites new pain upon themselves when the first time that we are officially aware that Apple's working on a mapping product is when they're on the stage saying, we honestly think this is the best mapping system that's ever been made. Like, no, it isn't, because the Statue of Liberty isn't in Boston Common. That's the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial. I know, because the postcards are totally different there.
Now we have we've had a little time inside Andy's brain, and I hope you've enjoyed it.
Please.
Stop at the gift shop. Apple's going to license it for the next show.
Inside Out with Andy Iannotko.
Buy a t-shirt.
Our show today, we're going to get your picks ready, gentlemen. Our show, we're going to do those in a moment. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. We are now, the clock is ticking. We believe we're less than 30 days away from a new iPhone. Why is that important? Because you want to kind of get your quote from Gazelle at the maximum distance from the time you're going to get the new phone. Because, I know this is complicated, but because the price of the phone is always going down a little bit every day, right? So the thing about the Gazelle quote, it's guaranteed, it's locked in for 30 days. So if you can, this is what you want. And I think you might be right in a position to do this. If you can get that quote 30 days before you're going to buy a new phone, man, you're golden. Because you have that quote and they cannot change it, even though the price or the value of your phone is going down. So if you think you're buying a new iPhone or a new device of any kind, visit gazelle.com and at least get a quote. If you get a quote, then you know how much it's worth. And you certainly don't want to throw that old phone in a drawer and let it gather dust. You wouldn't do that with a $100 bill. Why would you do that with your phone? For trade-ins, shipping is free. The payment is fast. You can get a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. And the reason I usually get that is because they bump it up by 5%. So it's a little bit more valuable. Gazelle. Go to gazelle.com to see what your old device is worth. And while you're there, check out the selections of certified pre-owned devices as well. That's right. They sell iPhone 6S, iPhone 6S Pluses, iPads, and Samsung Galaxy phones. Gently used, fully inspected, 30-day return policy. Ooh, they're selling MacBooks and iPads now. They've expanded their line. That's cool. Everything is sold without a carrier contract, but it all will work on all the major U.S. carriers. You can even get financing. They have financing on all devices from a firm, and you do it right at checkout. You provide some basic information. You'll get approved instantly and pay in 3, 6, or 12 months. It's just great. They also offer 12-month warranties now powered by Assurant for cell phones and iPads. That covers not just, you know, hardware defects, but cracked screens and water damage. Gazelle. I love Gazelle. Save a little money on a pre-owned device. Get a little money on an old device you don't want anymore. Just pay it. Pass it forward. Pay it forward. It's kind of like the best kind of recycling. Gazelle. Gazelle.com. Check them out today. And remember, 30 days 30 days. Actually, you might want to wait a little longer, right? Because you want 30 days from the day you get your new iPhone or the day after, day before you get your new iPhone. No, day after. Have 1 day to transfer. Okay, obviously I'm overthinking this. But
sell now, use a burner phone, and then the price is high, and then
okay, you're right. It's true. You want to maximize the price. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I just put it down behind me. So this is all the fault of Serenity Caldwell. I'm going to blame her for a lot of things
Everything is.
She bought a pair of these and then did a review on them. The Bose Quiet Comfort 35 Bluetooth headphones.
Everybody loves those. Yeah.
Yeah, because like for you used to Bluetooth sort of sounding like the probe droid from Empire. You know, because it's just the bandwidth is so insufficient. And because all the talk about Apple jettisoning the headphone jack, I wanted to try the state of Bluetooth headphones. And I tried the Beats ones and they were okay. And then I tried Serenity's headphones the last time I saw her. She was in Montreal a couple weeks ago and they were just fantastic. They sounded better than a lot of, I guess, any Bluetooth headphone I've heard before. So I picked up a pair of them. They come in this very nice, you know, if you're used to Bose, they come in this very nice carrying case. It fits right in your pocket before you go on the airplane. But they're really nice phones. They're not exactly a style that I would have gotten on my own, but the Bluetooth sound by itself, it's phenomenal. I'm not an audiophile. I don't have, you know, Marco Armont ears for things like this, but I can tell when it's really badly distorted Bluetooth sound. And I started getting really interested in Bluetooth when the Apple TV had it, because sometimes there's other people in the room and you just want to watch something, or they're playing games, or, you know, they're just running around noisy, and you put them on and you're just watching your show and you don't have to worry about anything. And then the Apple Watch, of course, doesn't have a headphone jack, so Bluetooth headphones really useful for those, but I had the little sporty ones. These feel like real grown-up earphones, and this is just, I guess, the current state of Bluetooth. And I don't know if Apple will have any of their own proprietary magic that they'll layer on top of it. But even if they're this good, I'll be pretty happy. I'm not happy with the battery life running out, because it seems like just when you're really enjoying the noise canceling, it fails on you, and then the whole world comes crashing in again. But battery life is what it is, and they do have a little jack plug that you can use to put in normally, like a normal set of earphones. You're not totally left out. But I was really pleasantly surprised. And I think if you are sort of, if you really want Bluetooth headphones, you don't want ones that are just little sporty ones. You want actual cans you can put on your head. And sound quality does matter to you. These are really, really good headphones.
Nice. And not cheap, $450.
The future is never cheap.
Yeah. Comfortable?
Yeah, very comfortable. I mean, they go sort of, I would call them over the ear, but I have big grappling mangled ears, so they kind of sit a little bit on for me, but I've had no problem with them. I've not had to take them off at all.
They don't have microphones, though. I'm thinking, because if iPhone 7 doesn't have a headphone jack, some of us will probably turn to wireless headphones.
I've never tried using, I don't use my phone as a phone. Ever since Don Milton put a web browser on a phone, I've just never used the phone part.
I know. I'm with you.
But I think they might have, because there is a little hole. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they do have a built-in. I'll test it out.
I think the hole is probably for the noise cancellation.
The jack. Yeah, maybe, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. If somebody has a recommendation for headphones, wireless headphones, that can also be used for talking into, but sound good for music. That's the problem. Usually those are different.
It'd be like the Battlestar Galactica headset with the two ears and the...
Right. And it's also a different Bluetooth profile, isn't it? There's A2DP for the high-quality music, but you have to use the headset profile.
Bluetooth hands-free. There's 12 different Bluetooth protocols.
Huh. This might be something unsolved. Maybe Apple will solve it. I bet you there's a Beats in your future. Hey, Andy Anako, what do you got for us?
A couple of weeks, I was pretty excited about the new version of Scrivener, my favorite word processor, making it to iOS. And a lot of people ask, well, what's the difference between Scrivener and another popular text editor for iOS and for the Mac called Ulysses? Because they're both the same, kind of the same category, where your interface is not necessarily I'm opening a doc, I'm closing a doc, so much as I'm opening a workspace that contains a bunch of documents that are organized together into folders, and this is my workspace for a specific project. The difference between Ulysses and Scrivener is that Ulysses is specifically a text-based editor. It doesn't allow a lot of the data types, a lot of the external PDFs, images, sound files. What I like to say is that Scrivener really is the electric guitar. The Ulysses is the acoustic guitar. But they're both really great tools for people who are, work on writing projects, as opposed to just dashing off little things. Although they both work great for those things too. But Ulysses just released 2.6, a big upgrade in which they brought two great features to the iOS app. First, full access to Dropbox. Dropbox is an equal favored nation's file source for the iOS app. So you can have all of your documents on Dropbox and use it on the Ulysses version, the desktop version and the iOS version. And they also added integration with WordPress. So now you can write and publish direct to your WordPress blog, whether it's on WordPress.com or whether it's a self-hosted blog directly from Ulysses. And it works really, really great. And they had a couple other enhancements too, but that those two in itself are just huge, huge, huge moves forward. And they were really hard to implement as well as they did here. Ulysses, another difference between Ulysses and Scrivener is that Ulysses is really one of those new revolutionary ideas where we're going to try to give you a writing environment that removes as many distractions as possible, that lets you to really focus on what you're doing. And it works great on the Mac, but it works even better on iOS, where you can't have overlapping windows and you can really just get right into the writing groove. They actually added a couple of new features to both versions of it toward that extent, where you can actually have it into not just typewriter mode, where instead of tap, 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 where the typewriter, the text scrolls up as you type, but you can also have the like tunnel vision, where the only thing that's in clear, sharp, black and white focus is the line that you're actually writing. So you're really not looking at, what did I just write? Do I need to fix that? You can only just really focus on the actual words you're typing at that time. And it sounds like a gimmick, but it's gimmicks that will get you to the end of your novel or the end of whatever report you have to write. So Ulysses is one of the greatest word processors you can buy on iOS or Mac, and this is a significant upgrade. And it's worth it's $20, I think. It's priced at $44 for the Mac version, $25 for the iOS version, and I'm glad that they're charging actual money for it. It's not a huge amount of money, but enough that you feel as though you're contributing to the value of the product, and you're also helping the people who created it pay their rent and raise their children, which makes me very happy.
Because in this case, the new features are worth the upgrade.
Absolutely. Major upgrade. Yeah. Particularly if you publish to WordPress. The WordPress has their own iOS app, but it's a little bit weird. I've never really enjoyed using it. I always use the web interface. And I've been using Ulysses to put things onto the Sun-Times WordPress site.
Oh, nice.
And it's been really – it feels as though you are Ford Prefect publishing something to the Hitchhiker's Guide. You've written something. You press a button. It's on the CMS. You're done. As opposed to – okay, now I'm going to call my editor or send him a text message and see if he knows, see if he sees this on the server yet. So it's good stuff.
I have to say, I really praise WordPress for having an API. I think that's so great. That means there's a lot of, well, remember Daniel Jalkut? There's others who have made great blogging programs because there's an API.
Even you as the creator of a resource are not possible of seeing all the awesome that's possible inside that resource. It's only other people that can help you find the awesome. Yeah. That's why you have open APIs.
Open.
APIs find the awesome.
I like it. I have a new search engine. Wait a minute. What? Who? You know? do we need a new search engine?
AltaVista.
AltaVista's back, baby. No, this is kind of interesting. The guy who created Twitter and Blogger before it, Ev Williams, has a new company called Jelly, Ask Jelly. And it's kind of a search engine meets Quora. But by itself, I mean, you know, if you go to AskJelly.com, you can query things. And humans answer, right? And so you get kind of interesting things. But this is why this has been around for, I don't know, a few months. But the thing that really got me is the Ask Jelly Chrome extension, because now when you do searches on Google, if there's a Jelly answer, you'll get it. No, today is No Man's Sky Day today, right? And everybody's all talking about it. So I was doing a search on No Man's Sky, praying, hoping there'd be a Mac version. No, there's not. Praying, hoping there'd be an Xbox version. No, there's not. It's not on any of the things I have. It's the PlayStation 4 comes out today, and a few days later, we'll see a PC version. But when I did the search, the Ask Jelly plugin added a little thing in the sidebar, which was a Jelly question comparing another game, which I'd never heard of, and a response, which is really awesome. So Google's always done, you know, these sidebar knowledge graph things, but this is an additional element that is added via a Chrome extension. And turning it on is kind of cool. Every once in a while, you'll get some additional information to your search from a human being who's actually got an idea. It's from askjelly.com, and it's in the Chrome extensions library, and it's free. And it's kind of a nice thing to have hanging around. I don't think I'm ever going to go to a separate site and ask a question, you know, or do a search of questions. But the fact that they pop up in my search results, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of another fabulous episode. I thank Andy Iannocco for talking me down from the ledge, as always.
Don't worry, there are other ledges.
There are many. There's many a ledge. If you go to the Chicago Sun-Times, you're sure to read his byline from time to time, covering technology topics in his website, CWOB.com. Follow him on Twitter, IHNATKO. And he's got a great Flickr feed of images. He's a great photographer. Instagram, too. Thank you, Andrew. Oh, and don't forget his many other podcasts, including Material, a podcast about Google, which is on replay.fm, right?
Yep.
And on 5x5, you're still doing Iannocco's Almanac?
Yep, although we have big, big news coming. Not the next show, but the show after that. So definitely tune in for that once. Go to the 5x5 and look for the Iannocco Almanac.
Yeah, there's a tease. Big.
Was I being a tease?
Well, why? Also, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. It is the place to go to learn how to use your Mac better, or Pokemon. It's a great site with lots of great information, iMore.com. And he has his own podcast, including the brand new one, Apple Talk, with Serenity.
Yes, Serenity and Michael Gartenberg. We talked about the iPad story today. It should be out tomorrow.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Oh, you do two podcasts in one day. I'm your second, huh?
No, you're never the second, Leo.
But man.
You're the main event.
That's the warm-up podcast. We'll call it that. Thank you very much for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday on the Twit Network. You can watch live at twit.tv/live or in the alternate player at live.twit.tv for people who have trouble with the first. There's always the second. And the chat room is always open 24/7 for you to chat in, irc.twit.tv. And I want to really give a tip of the hat to the community moderators. They're self-nominated. They come out of the community, and they do a great job making that chat family-friendly and fun. So tip your moderators and enjoy the view. I don't think they even accept tips. I tried to pay them, and they said no. But they're just great. That's irc.twit.tv. TV. Of course, you can also get the show on demand everywhere that you get podcasts, including our own website, twit.tv/MBW. If you'd like to see the Brick House before it's whittled away to nothing, hurry. Email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure you get in and get a tour and get the show and get to see what's going on. And as I mentioned, on August 21st, a little less than 2 weeks from today, we will be moving. So if you have tickets to see a show after that, go to the East Side Studios. Moving on up to the East Side Studios. I would wear socks, though, because that stick-em looks pretty. Look at that. They're gonna finish that before we finish the show. You like that carpet? Looks good, huh? Nice charcoal. Yeah. Something neutral.
Well, you're coming to Petaluma in 2 months. Like you can still stop by the Brick House, but you'll be getting your nails done.
It's a brewery. Brewery coming in here. They're gonna have giant vats of hops and malt.
So we're about a different kind of party.
It'll smell the same, though. That's the amazing thing. Thanks for joining us. Back to work. Break time is over.
Sorry.